So now do you feel like, all right, now we have this new president. How do we address this in future programming, or can you?
Well, since we programmed so far in advance, I'm hoping that by the time we get around to things we're programming now, he won't be in office for one reason or another.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 532, Shakespeare and Trump. Last week, we talked with Scott Parkinson about his surprisingly prescient production of Julius Caesar that played in the pre-election fall of 2016 at the Writers Theater in Chicago. So it seemed like the perfect time to share with you some conversations I had at the annual meeting of the Shakespeare Theater Association, which was held in January 2017 at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company in Baltimore, Maryland, and where we gave a special performance of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. The people at the Shakespeare Theater Association, or STA, refer to their post-dinner, post-evening meetings, gatherings as drinkscussions, and in my case, it was also pod drinking, as I was able to turn on my microphone several times when interesting conversations began. And one of the things I was asking everyone was how theater generally, but Shakespeare companies specifically, can or should react artistically to the presidency of Donald Trump. As you'll hear, I spoke with many people at the STA conference, and I began with Amy Ratner, the managing director of the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia. They had just finished a production of King Lear, and we talked about what that production had to say and what future productions might have to say about President Trumplefinskin. You just did one,
yes.
Apparently. You just did King Lear.
Yes.
But it began during the campaign? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, it ran during the campaign. It ran from the middle of June through the end of November, so it went through the election.
So was it conceived? Was it programmed? No.
We actually program our seasons 2 years in advance.
Okay.
So both Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and King Lear, we did not plan for that to
You knew it was an election year,
right,
but...
Right, yeah. It was going to be about power and the abuse of power and all of those things and a comment on what we're dealing with politically in general, but we had no idea how much it would resonate with people with the way that the election rolled out.
And how, and what did happen once the election happened? How did people's perceptions of King Lear change as a result of the election?
It actually became more cathartic for people. You could see that it was the depth of emotional response got stronger as November went on.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. And so now do you feel like, all right, now we have this new president. How do we address this in future programming, or can you?
Well, since we programmed so far in advance, I'm hoping that by the time we get around to things we're programming now, he won't be in office for one reason or another. But right now, we've got Coriolanus running, and we're talking about, there's so many things that you don't think about it commenting on the political situation we're in right now,
right.
But then you're sitting in the theater and you're watching it unfold, and it's just a little too real.
Yeah, holy crap. Yeah. What have we done? Yeah. I mean, I happened to just watch the Hollow Crown, Richard III, with Benedict Cumberbatch just after the election. I went, oh man, there's going to be a lot of productions of Richard III in the next 4 years.
Yes, and we're actually in the middle of the tetralogy right now, so we're doing the Henry VI III this fall, and then Richard III next fall, so that will be, if he's still around, that will be during, but we will see the rise of Richard in part three. So.
I guess the danger is getting too on the nose with it.
Well, and I don't think it's a danger, actually, because I think...
You lean in.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's true of a number of things going on right now. I think that we as theater professionals and theater makers need to channel the momentum, the activism that is alive in our country right now towards productive, positive action.
Yeah.
Quit the griping and pulling out of our hair and say, no, these are the things I can do today, right now, in my community to have positive impact in direct response to what's going on.
Finally, after several podcast interviews with the illustrious director of Shakespeare, Kate Powers, plain Kate, Bonnie Kate Powers, I finally get to meet her here at the STA conference, and she has lovely ginger hair, and she's willing to talk to me in person and be seen with me.
In public.
In public. So I'm very excited about that. But I want to ask you the same question that I'm asking everybody else. How do we as Shakespeareans respond to President Trump of Thinskin and program what Shakespeare plays should we be doing to either comment on what's going on?
Well, all of them, because they teach us what it means to be human.
Always, and that's right. That's always true.
Right, that is always true. But I think one of the things that they also do is that they help us understand the difference between opinion and fact.
Do they? How do we do that?
Because we talk about, we interpret the play, but there's stuff that is empirical fact in the text, right? And so if we go back to the text, if we're approaching the plays in a thoughtful way and we're really looking at what's in the text, Disco Macbeth is not in there, right? That's a thing you're putting on it.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So you don't want to impose something that isn't supported by the text.
Well, a lot of people in this room do, but
right.
No, I don't. But I would say in terms of specific texts that I think that at this moment, after the roller coaster ride of Donald's first tantrum of a week.
Yeah, I know. We're only in the first week of Donald Trump's
I think Richard II, the corruption, the bushy baguette and greenness of the world. Richard III, certainly, although Richard III gives the dumpster fire way too much credit, in my opinion. Coriolanus. Hamlet, because it's about trying to figure out where the truth is versus the opinion, and an absolutely corrupt person who has done unspeakable things in order to reach power.
Right.
Right. I mean, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely.
Yeah.
There is an interpretation of that play which the text will support that is very political.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's another.
Oh, incredibly. Yes. Yeah. Please keep me away from the Laertes and Ophelia family. I don't care. I'm way more interested in the politics of Denmark. Go ahead.
I mean, there's a version that it's all about a domestic drama, right? Which makes it a little bit smaller, right?
Right. But there's also a political drama going on in that play.
Yeah. So those are probably at the top of my list. I think Titus is not going to be a miss before we're done.
Yeah. It seems to me there's going to be tons of productions of Richard III.
And maybe Sir Thomas More.
And Sir Thomas, well, at least for that one speech about refugees. But all it was recommended on Twitter by Christopher Moore, the author of Fool and The Serpent of Venice, that Midsummer, Snout should be played by an orange-topped monkey as he's presenting a wall.
That seems like a very cruel thing to do to poor Snout.
Yeah, you're probably...
It's not easy being Snout already.
You're right. Dead, my dove?
What did Snout ever do to you?
Well, indeed. Indeed. Well, and I love... You mentioned Richard II, which is, I thought, well, hang on, that's not right. But then as I thought about it, no. Trump thinks he was appointed by God. Or at least, he's by the largest choice of God ever in the history of the world.
There's that, and then there's also the swirl of sycophants around him feeding his narcissism.
Also true of Richard III,
right.
That, sycophants who realize that they will be gone too once they're have outlasted their usefulness.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm Brian Isaac Phillips, producing artistic director at the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? This week we're performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged in the city where we found this holy grail of theatrical literature in a car park, at the Curve Theater in Leicester. We'll be at the Curve for three nights, February 23rd, 24th, 25th, and then we'll continue our 50-city UK tour next week in Gravesend, Swindon, and Shoreham. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader or email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to the Shakespeare Theater Association Conference in Baltimore, where our conversation about Shakespeare in the age of Trump was joined by a good old friend and a good new friend.
My old friend, Mia Gosling, the greatest stick figure Shakespearean cartoonist extant. What do you think? What play do you think we should be doing in response to President Trump?
Well, everybody said the obvious one of Richard III and some of the other ones, but I think King John is an outside contender.
Is it just because King John hasn't done that much and we wish President Trump weren't around that much?
Yes, absolutely. Alternatively, it's about a megalomaniac leader who's out of touch with the wills of the people and the will of his government. He's willing to go to all ends to achieve what he wants, including the disappearance of his nephew Arthur. He disseminates untruths frequently, and he gets unhinged when people challenge his power. I think that sounds very familiar, don't you?
It sounds very familiar, and what's very exciting about this is that for once, there's a reason to do King John.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes.
Always a reason to do King John.
Okay, all right.
Eleanor of Aquitaine is the reason to do King John.
Okay, yeah, all right. So then after that 5 minutes is done, what do you do with the rest of the evening?
Ba-dum-bum. Sing.
Not even ba-dum-bum. I'm seriously asking. But
you have
Matt.
Constance.
That's the bastard.
The bastard and Constance.
Constance is such a good
one. Oh, my God. I've been sitting at a table full of
commodities.
I don't even know what that means.
The commodity speech. The bastard has a speech about commodities.
You're adorable thinking I know that. But
Austin, are you saying you're not familiar with King John?
I'm not as familiar with King John, clearly, as the rest of this table.
My name is Mac McDaniel. I'm the dramaturgy coordinator at Quill Theater.
All right, and you're also arguing for King John?
Yeah, I think King John is my favorite history, actually.
Oh, my God. There you go, out on a limb. All right. Why?
I mean, it's Philip the Bastard. I mean, I think Philip the Bastard is, you know, top five best Shakespearean roles ever written. I mean, I think he's brilliant. He's got the wit of a Benedict or an Iago, but like the bravery of a Coriolanus. I think he's just amazing. I think he is the first time that I saw King John, our Philip the Bastard was so good that he made that play for me. So he's just...
Oh my God, this has been such a great star conference because we got to perform Long Lost Shakes in front of the... the most appreciative audience we will ever perform this show for. And I now have motivation to read King John. This is a big weekend for me.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Shakespearean Trumpian allusions via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. Thanks, as always, to Matthew the Bastard, Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Anthony Logan Cole. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Brian Isaac Phillips, producing artistic director of the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, who will host next year's 2018 Star Conference. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 532, 1596th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And I'll leave the last word this week to stick figure webcomic artist Mia Gosling, a.k.a. Good Tickle Brain.
Don't worry.
Sorry, Henry VIII still sucks.
So some things remain true and constant. So happy to hear that.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.